Following his successful re-election bid, Governor Scott Walker says his administration is going to be even more aggressive in pushing its agenda due to the Republicans' increased majorities in the state legislature. So, what does that mean? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is a post-election edition of the Week in Review. We will hear from two guests from different political viewpoints about what voters did on Tuesday and why, and what it means for the future of Wisconsin and the country. And we'll welcome your reactions and your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. David Blaska is a former Dane County supervisor. His Blaska's Bring It blog can be found at ibmadison.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Louis Fortas is with us. He is the editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, which is an alternative weekly newspaper in southeastern Wisconsin. He is also a former Democratic state representative from Milwaukee. Good morning.
Morning, Joy, and good morning, David.
Good morning, Lou.
All righty, then. Let's start with Governor Walker defeating Mary Burke by nearly 6 points on Tuesday. Why did that happen, Louis Fortas?
Well, first of all, I thought Mary did a very good job. I thought she was an excellent candidate, and I thought her campaign staff did a good job. Some of the consultants and outside groups, I think I would have a little bit different evaluation, but I thought she was a superb candidate. She really was. And she's the real thing. She's a good, strong candidate and a very good person. So why did she lose? The main thing was a low turnout. The Republicans in Wisconsin have a solid somewhere between 1.2, 1.3 million votes. I mean, this can be a special election, a midterm election, any kind of election. They can pretty much turn out for statewide between 1.2, 1.3. Democrats have a solid 1.1 to 1.2 and million people. And this was a lower turnout. And it was just, you know, that was one of the main reasons is that if the turnout would have been greater, and you see this in presidential elections where we have a much greater turnout, the Democrats win. Lower turnout. So in gubernatorial years, Republicans do well. In presidential years, Democrats do well. So if you're running if you're a congressperson, I remember this was 20 years ago in the first congressional district where Les Aspin was congressman and all. If it was a presidential year, that would be a 52% Democratic district, and if it was a gubernatorial year, it was a 52% Republican district.
All right,
so,
let's do that shift. Yeah. All right. So, David Blaska, why was Governor Walker reelected?
Actually, you know, the turnout was a record high. It was 54.5%, very close to 55%. The previous high was 52.4% in 1962. Wisconsin's electoral turnout may have been the highest in the nation, according to a professor at the University of Florida. So, obviously, Wisconsin's gubernatorial elections are all held in off years. Sometimes Democrats win, sometimes Republicans win. This was a Republican year. Wisconsin was not an outlier at all. Supposedly Sam Brownback in Kansas was going to be defeated, and Tim Scott in Florida was going to be defeated. They won, and Republicans won in states like Illinois, Maryland, and Massachusetts, deep, deep blue states. I think Barack Obama, how many times did he come to Wisconsin on Mary Burke's behalf? I think twice, and the First Lady at least once. Wisconsin voters are unhappy with Barack Obama, as they are throughout the nation. 56% say they disapprove of his job performance. And Republican incumbents won, with the exception of Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania, the governor there. In the House, they've added a Senate. It looks to add nine Republicans, which would push the total, I think, to 54. And also, Scott Walker, And I'm going to ask you this question, Lou. Scott Walker is an exciting candidate. I've asked so many of my friends, were you really excited about Mary Burke? Well, I grew to like her, they said. So, Lou, were you excited by your candidate?
Well, again, I think, yes, I thought she was. I thought she did a very good job. I thought she was a good candidate. Scott Walker is a very good politician. I mean, you know, I think everyone who understands the game and watches the game will say that. I mean, they may disagree, and they may disagree very strongly with his policies, but yeah, you know, he's a clever politician.
Well, clever. What do you mean by clever, though?
He knows how to. He knows how to. Well, first of all. We were talking last night. I was talking with some friends, and when he ran for county executive, the first thing he did was he attacked a piece of public art, which was a blue shirt, you know, kind of glorifying the blue collar nature of Milwaukee, you know. And he just went after that as some kind of terrible thing. This public art, uh-huh. You know, most people had no idea what he was talking about.
Well, you're saying the voters are stupid then.
No, I'm saying that he does a very good job of finding little issues. I mean, killing the $810 million we would have gotten for high-speed rail. I mean, from an economist's point of view, that was about as dumb as it could be. But he packaged it up in such a way, and he presented it in such a way that there was not a ton of pushback from a number of people when he threw away $810 million.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
Yeah. Let's talk. I mean, we have a caller actually that has a question. Jim in Osceola is with us. Hello, Jim.
Good morning. I voted against Governor Walker, and I was wondering about the Burke strategy of taking the high road. She was relatively unknown, and basically she said she could do a better job of managing the economy. Well, Governor Walker created 100,000 jobs, and to most people, that's not small potatoes. There was so much red meat to galvanize the opposition. There was the 85,000 who lost their Badger Care. There was Act 10. There was his tainted AIDS that have been convicted. There was all that red meat to throw out to galvanize the base, and they didn't seem to do that. And I was just wondering about their high road strategy.
David's chomping at the bit because I take it you don't think there was a high road strategy.
Well, first of all, I think the caller made some good points. But no, I was amazed by the negativity of the Mary Burke campaign. And I defy anyone to say, here's my plan for Wisconsin. Here's what I want to do. Here's what I bring to the table. Except her resume, which turns out, the mainstream press, I hate to use that cliche, did not vet her job record. It turns out it was very checkered. But she didn't enunciate any kind of governing theme or any kind of thematic approach to, here's what Mary Burke does as governor. Instead, it was criticizing Scott Walker. On a couple of those points, you know, you mentioned Act 10. In Wisconsin, to get something to amend the Constitution, the legislature has to approve, the governor signs, and then you have two successive elections. In essence, that's what Wisconsin has done with Act 10, Joy. The legislature approved, the governor signed in office, and we've had two elections now, one in June of 2012, and now this election in November on Act 10. That was the motivating force behind Mary Burke's campaign. She didn't need to mention it because she got that 45% that hated what Scott Walker did with collective bargaining reform. That was the elephant in the room. The jobs thing, you can't tell me that Lee Saunders and of the AFSCME wanted to grow Wisconsin's private sector jobs. He said, we have a score to settle in Wisconsin. And the voters said, yeah, I remember what happened in 2011 with the takeover of the Capitol, the liberal intifada, and we don't want that anymore. It's we approve of Act 10.
Louis Fortas, our caller, Jim, said he voted against Walker. Even Governor Walker said that, he attributed that somewhat to his win, that he was saying, here's our way forward, here's all the positive things we did, and Mary Burke was just saying, I'm not Scott Walker.
Okay, well, first of all, I think her message was, you know, you promised the 250,000 jobs, you came in at about 40%. And again, that 40% of on any test of any kind is failure. So so it was pretty clear, you know, like, give me a chance. I have a lot of business experience. Mm-hmm. And contrary to what David just said, which is just constantly bringing up something that isn't true, she does not have a dodgy resume. She has a damn good resume. I mean, she has a very impressive resume. I think, you know, people, as David said, you know, they grew to like her. And as they got to know her, yeah, I think they're pretty impressed. But anyway, the negativity was coming from, and this is what, you know, both sides, you know, campaigns do, that the candidate tries to stay somewhat on the high road, and then there's outside groups that they cannot control are the ones that are throwing the negative ads, a lot of the negative ads. And so, yes, I mean, there are people that hated Scott Walker for various reasons, and they were going to go after him, and Mary couldn't control that. So yes, there was a lot of negativity, but the negativity was coming from both sides. Trust me. I mean, there was, you know, you talk to Republicans like David now, and they'll say, "Oh, the Democrats were so negative." You talk to Democrats, and they say, "Those Republicans were so negative." I mean, both sides kind of ignore their negativity and, you know, focus on all the bad stuff coming from the other side. It was all these races are negative because there's so damn much money in the in these races.
Well, can I get back on that, Joy? I just want a couple of quick points, Lou. One is, so Scott Walker reduced taxes. Well, he reduced taxes for the wrong people, number one, Mary Burke says, and secondly, not enough. She denigrated the $11 a month property tax. Here we've frozen property taxes essentially for a couple of years. The freeze in university tuition. So whatever Scott Walker did wasn't good enough, not enough jobs. If Scott Walker said, "I'm going to grow 100,000 jobs and reverse this trend," you know, there would be no case at all. So Scott Walker, no matter what he did, the only comeback that Mary Burke had was, "Well, it wasn't good enough. I somehow could do better. I'll give tax cuts to the right people." And by the way, raising minimum wage, that is not a jobs program. People looked at that and they said, "How has that helped me?"
Well, you know what? Let me ask that, because since the referenda questions, not only in Wisconsin but around the country, people were in favor of raising the minimum wage,
right,
David. So
yeah. And they elected Scott Walker anyway. You know, these referenda questions, we had one in Dane County about amending the First Amendment, and it was worded in such a way to deny free speech to certain unfavorable groups out of political favor. I could word that statement to say, should some people have fewer free speech rights than others? And that would have been defeated. Sometimes, but yeah, raise the minimum wage, that sounds good. Okay, fine. But it's not an issue that motivates anyone except the true believers on the left. It's just not an issue that, it's a quick yes, but it's not a motivating issue.
Let me correct some of this stuff from an economist point of view, and you can look at the mainstream economic literature. When you cut taxes, if you want to stimulate the economy, you cut taxes for people who are going to spend the money that they save. If you cut taxes for the wealthy, they don't go create more jobs. They create more jobs if there's more demand, and there's more demand if regular people have money to spend.
Well, Lou, let me give you a real life.
Let Lou finish.
David, let me finish.
Yep,
please.
You bet.
Okay. In terms of jobs, Scott Walker was the one that set the bar. He said 250,000 jobs, which helped him get elected the first time. And, you know, you judge me on that. Well, you come back 4 years later, you judge him on it, and he said, "Well, I created 100,000. You know, that's not close to the bar that he set. And the minimum wage, yes, that does stimulate the economy. It has fallen behind tremendously. If you can go back to like the 70s, if you would have just adjusted that for inflation, we'd have a minimum wage about $12 right now. So, you know, this is not, you know, when somebody said, one of the candidates, I'm not sure if it was Scott Walker or in a different, or a local race, where, you know, they're saying that minimum wage jobs aren't really jobs or something like that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well,
and some of the hardest working people are being paid minimum wage.
I don't want to necessarily get into an in-depth debate on the minimum wage, because we have so many other issues that need to be covered in this post-election edition of The Week in Review. talking today with Louis Fortas and David Blaska. And we'll talk with you, too, if you would like to join us. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will get our guest to react to Governor Scott Walker saying his administration is going to get even more aggressive now. We'll wonder what that means coming up after this break. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are in a post-election edition of the Week in Review. Talk now about what now. Discuss the direction of the nation and the state of Wisconsin after some big Republican wins in Tuesday's midterm elections. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, Governor Walker had his first meeting with his cabinet members this week, and he told his cabinet in their first meeting that they are going to be even more aggressive now in pursuing and pushing their agenda because of strong Republican support in the legislature. He told his cabinet on Wednesday that voters want government to be more effective, more efficient, and more accountable. He says he will work closely with Republican legislative leaders to quickly pass a budget next year. And he has some other priorities, too. But let me ask you, David Blaska, what does the governor mean by being more aggressive in this coming term?
Well, he's got, he has now a 19-14 advantage in the Senate. It was 18-15 if you count Dale Schultz, who identified as a Republican in his own mind. So he actually has a pickup of 2 seats in the Senate. He picked up, I think, 3 seats in the Assembly. There's a couple very close. So he's got larger majorities. I think he's going to go bold again. First of all, the Government Accountability Board ought to be securing the locks a little bit. They participated and are knee-deep in the John Doe raids on free speech. I think we're going to see more tax cuts. I think we're going to see more vouchers, more school choice. School accountability, when the Milwaukee public school system gets an F from the DPI, I'm hoping that the governor takes over the Milwaukee school system, lock, stock, and barrel, the public school system, and reforms it, as has happened in Philadelphia and other large cities where the governor takes it over. Right to work, to raise that. I think the legislature is going to push for that. WMC, the Wisconsin Manufacturers Group, is divided on that issue, but when you look at Michigan next door, and the governor there, by the way, was reelected, Michigan, the home of Detroit, has right-to-work legislation, so that may very well find its way to the governor's desk. And if I didn't mention tax cuts, certainly more tax cuts.
Well, Louis Fortas, is that what aggressive means to you?
I'm not sure what aggressive means, but I find it interesting. For example, going after the Government Accountability Board. This is what we had before was an elections board that had partisan board members. The Democratic Party had one appointee, Republican Party had another. The Senate Republicans had the appointment. The Democratic senators had an appointment. The thing that was considered too political, so they put together a board that has retired judges who are supposedly non-political to some extent, and now they're saying, well, we have to change that. Wait a second, you put on these retired judges, what's wrong with this? And they're saying, well, the staff is too political. Well, the staff can be changed by these judges if they were unhappy with what the staff is doing, but they seem to be happy with what the staff is doing. But what's going on is they're investigating stuff that with the John Doe thing that the Republicans don't want to see. So what you do is you shoot the investigator, and that's what they're trying to do here, and that's what they call more aggressive, and that's what's kind of frightening. Is they're trying to move the state backward and trying to make it look more like Mississippi. Mississippi isn't doing that well.
What about what about the other policy issues that David mentioned? We're going to have, he thinks, possibly the legislature is going to give him right to work legislation.
Well, again, that's trying to make Wisconsin look like Mississippi.
Or Michigan.
Mississippi isn't doing that well. You want to have us looking like Michigan? I think we're doing better than that.
Can I just mention...
Why don't we look at the states that are going in a more progressive direction, like Washington State or whatever. They're doing quite well. Massachusetts, they're doing quite well. So why do we want to look like Mississippi?
Well, actually, Mississippi has attracted a number of automakers. they've located there because, and frankly, you've got South Carolina. I think BMW is there. You've got Mississippi and Alabama, and you've got Toyota and Nissan there. Building automobiles. So, I mentioned progressive states. California is doing lousy. So many of their cities are bankrupt. They have incredibly high taxes. Illinois is doing terrible under Democratic leadership. Their pensions are unfunded. Chicago is shooting itself to death. It's a basket case. That's why Illinois went and got rid of Pat Quinn and got Mr. Rauner there to run the state. So this old Mississippi thing getting a little old. Actually, Mississippi is growing jobs, and the South in general. I'm not saying that we should have right to work. I was very supportive of the Act 10 collective bargaining with public employees because mainly Democratic legislators who will say, I will raise your wages and all your benefits and whatnot in return. You support me and send some of that money back to my campaign. It became an incestuous circle.
Let me interrupt, David.
Yes,
do you think that that Act 10 is going to be expanded to firefighters or police, or for that matter, some public employees wonder if their pension is safe?
Well, let me just talk about that pension is safe thing. That's comes into the black helicopter thing, da-da-da-da-da. Of course their pension is safe.
Will it be privatized into a 401k rather than the state pension system?
Well, I think you see some elements of that, maybe. But, the pension is doing so well, I don't think they're going to touch that. It's very well managed, and it still relies on the stock market. The fact of the matter is that public employees are now paying the share that they used to pay not that long ago, about 15 or 20 years ago. They paid that share. Now they're paying it again. I think, though, more likely on to include firefighters and
you think
police.
That there will be an attempt to include?
I think there'll be legislation, yeah. And, it depends on – I think it could be – I have to quickly think here in the assembly, at least. I think they're able to pass veto proof, but not in the Senate. But I think that'll get to Scott Walker's desk. I'm not going to even pretend to guess what Scott Walker would do with that because I really don't know, Joy.
Yeah. Well, do you think that might be on the table, Lewis?
It gets down to which side they were on in the last election. I think the statewide police association supported Mary Burke, so I think that they will probably go after them. I think the Milwaukee police and firefighters were with Scott Walker, so I think they'll be protected. I think, unfortunately, it's gotten that political, which is pretty sad. But I want to go back to one thing, David. So I got you. So you.
Yes, sir.
You came on record here saying that you want to see Wisconsin be more like Mississippi, and that should be our model. Is that what you were saying?
I want to attract more manufacturing jobs. That since we're circling back here a little bit, you want to raise the minimum wage. I'll tell you what, we get more jobs in here, and employers are going to have to bid up what they pay for the fry guy at the quick food place.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to grow jobs in Wisconsin.
But let me.
Go ahead. No, we're going to get the minimum wage, and Joy doesn't want that. Go ahead, Joy.
I want to talk about more of the election results and implications and not one issue. Rosie in Eau Claire is with us. Hello, Rosie.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. The thing I've been wondering about, first of all, when Mr. Walker has repeatedly said he created jobs, I'd like to know the wages of these jobs. But more importantly, the Democrats say there's going to be a deficit. The Republicans say definitely not. If there is a deficit, will he have to backpedal some? He's going to raise the school vouchers, so then is he going to cut public education more? What is he going to do, and will this have any implications on his run for presidency if he has to backpedal? And just for the record, my property taxes have went up every year. They have not went down. So I can't believe, you know, maybe other communities they have. But I was just wondering, if there is a deficit, what Mr. Walker will do about that.
Yeah, thanks, Rosie. And let's stick to the budget and the surplus versus deficit issue first, and then we'll get into possible presidential aspirations of Governor Walker. Well, Louis Fortas, you do have an economics background. What's going on with that, and a state legislative background for that matter? What's going on with the state budget right now?
Well, I think there will be there's going to be a deficit. And it's a function of projections right now. I mean, it is a projected deficit, but you don't know what the revenues are going to be. You don't know how successful the economy will grow. So right now there is scheduled to be a deficit. And this, as the caller pointed out, Scott Walker has not one eye, but both eyes on this 2016 presidential election. There is no way that he is going to raise taxes. I mean, that would just kill him with the major Republican funders throughout the nation. So he will cut. And what he will cut, David will have probably a better idea of what he would cut. But you saw in past budgets that, they goes after, the programs for lower income people and working people. And he's not going to hurt the wealthy. So that's what you're going to see. But there's no way that he is going to go and raise taxes. He's going to cut and cut and cut.
What's he going to cut, David?
Well, Louis is right about cutting. I don't know what he's going to cut. I think, but he is going to cut spending. And I think he's going to cut taxes, to be honest about it. But I also believe that the economy is growing in Wisconsin. It's starting to pick up steam. It is nationally, too, to be honest about it. And Wisconsin's going to be part of the nation, one of the 50 states. So I think that growth is going to take care of most of this. I don't think we need to worry about, cutting grandma's food, stamps or anything like that. Of course, that's federal. I think that the economy is going to grow, and the budget will be balanced. There's no use worrying about it now.
We have another caller, Alex in Green Bay. Hello, Alex.
Hi there.
Yes.
I just had a quick question about the results of a referendum, the transportation referendum in the state of Wisconsin.
Right.
A certain amount of money is going to be taxed out from gas and used for transportation. I was curious what that could be earmarked for, if anything specific at all, i.e., is it for highway development only? Is it for public transportation or things like bike lanes and overpasses for bikes, things like that?
Yeah, we voted on Tuesday to not allow the legislature or to go after this money that's in the transportation fund, like happened some years ago under the Doyle administration. But what is that money going for? And Louis Fortas, so is it good that we changed the Constitution to protect the transportation fund?
Of course not. And the thing that was interesting, it got a tremendously high vote, and it was the way it was written.
Exactly.
it was written very well to get it passed. But so this is full employment for the road builders is what you have. And the situation is people are driving less. A lot of young people are kind of pushing back against, this need for cars, and they are sharing cars, they are biking more, they are living closer to work. And so there's less, consumption of gasoline for that reason, and also for the fact that those who do have cars have more energy-efficient cars. So the transportation fund is funded by a segregated fund that was funded by tax on gasoline and some vehicle registration. So when that decreases, obviously their revenues go down. So they, at one point, the state did borrow money from them, or took money from them, and it is all the state's money, and the legislature can do what they want. So they wanted to protect their money, so they have this. So in answer to the, so I think it's like full employment for the road builders. But the other question is, public transit, I believe, is in there. And I don't know about bike paths and that. This legislature is not particularly sympathetic to bike paths and the like. But I do think public transit is in there.
Yeah, and David?
Well, I think Lewis is correct about what's in there. I guess the only comment I would have is, first of all, I actually agree with you, Lewis, on I don't like tying the legislature's hands. I don't like encrypting into the Constitution things like this. On the other hand, raiding the transportation fund was a bad idea, but let the legislature do it if it thinks it needs to and suffer the consequences. In terms, though, Lewis, I always thought at least a few years ago, maybe 6 years ago, people like Barack Obama were always talking about shovel-ready jobs and infrastructure. But maybe the Democrats, maybe your memo says we're off that now. You'd have to answer that because I can't.
I wanted to talk one more state legislative priority. According to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, he was outlining his plans for the next 2 years session. He also, besides of going reforming the Government Accountability Board and some other things that we've already talked about, he's looking at the UW and research done at the UW, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and says that this research ought to be focused on economic development and how to help the state's economy, not the mating habits of whatever. Lewis Fortas, do you think the state legislature should look at what the UW is researching and change that in any way?
Well, you have a governor who never thought it was important enough to finish college.
All right.
I didn't say he couldn't, okay? Don't. But I mean that he never thought it was important enough to finish college. That sends a bad message. I mean, I think that the research on, you know, what to do to create jobs, I mean, we know what to do to create jobs. They're just not doing it. The idea of saying, well, you know, you shouldn't, making fun of various types of research. Some of these things end up finding various cures for cancer and all. The science is complicated stuff. And I'm not a scientist, nor are any of those people in the legislature scientists. And for them to be dictating, you know, what's legitimate research and what isn't, that's kind of in the eye of the beholder. And if somebody is funding this research who knows what they're doing, and they think it's legitimate, I'd rather have them making the decision than 132 people, you know, from various backgrounds. Almost, I don't think any of them are scientists.
All right, David?
Well, this is a new one on me, Joy. I honestly haven't heard that before. But I think most of this research is funded by private industry or foundations. So I don't think that's too... I will say, though, that the Republican legislature, especially the CPA caucus, found a slush fund of millions of dollars that the university had been squirreling away and had been unrevealed. It's about time that this huge institution got a little oversight, and they're getting some oversight in terms of dictating what kind of research they should do. I'm going to beg off on that one. I don't buy that.
We will continue our discussion of the aftermath of Tuesday's elections during this edition of our Week in Review. Our guests are David Blaska, a former Dane County supervisor, and Lewis Fortas, who is also a former Democratic state representative. He is the editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to weigh in on what now for the state of Wisconsin and the country. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with David Blaska and Lewis Fortas about primarily Wisconsin's midterm elections and welcoming your input, too. You know, we've been mainly talking about the race for governor. Let me quickly click through some of the other races just to get you both to weigh in on what happened. We had Brad Schimmel, the Waukesha County District Attorney, the victor in the race for Attorney General, defeating Democrat, the Jefferson County District Attorney, Susan Happ. What does this mean for law enforcement? Your reaction, David Blaska?
Well, I think Brad Schimmel was supported by the overwhelming number of sheriffs, and including quite a few Democrats. So I, you know, it was a Republican year, and it's sometimes in politics, you know, in retail, it's location, 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 and sometimes in politics, it's timing, timing, timing.
Seems to me you kind of like the fact that Susan Happ was a Harley
Oh, I love rider. It. Yeah, I saw her ad, you know, and I, if she takes off that helmet and it's a woman and da-da-da, and she's riding a big bike. And I'm a Harley guy myself. So is Scott Walker, by the way. And so is Scott McCallum, and so is Tommy Thompson. So there's something going there. So, but the ad broke out of the clutter, and no one was paying attention to the primary. She had her record questioned quite a bit, but I thought she was a great candidate.
Yeah, but the reaction to the AG results, Louis Fortas?
Yeah, I tend to agree with David. I think it is a big function of you know what year you're running in, and this was a good Republican year, and so I think she was again a very good candidate. She was getting elected in a county that is not a Democratic county.
Jefferson. Yeah.
She had a lot of crossover voters, Republicans voting for her, and I think she has a good future, and I think in Wisconsin politics, and so we'll wait and see and. I think she's going to be a great future candidate for the Democrats.
All right. All of the incumbents running for Congress were reelected, but the open seat that's now Tom Petri, who's retiring, we have Republican State Senator Glenn Grothman winning the 6th Congressional District over the Democratic candidate, the Winnebago County Executive Mark Harris. A Republican year? Is that the answer there too, Louis Fortas?
Well, it's the Republican seat, so that was determined in the primary as to who was going to, you know, become the next congressman. Glenn Grothman is going to be interesting because he will say some of the more extreme, outrageous things, and the newspapers and TV stations will love it because he will make great copy for them.
And is Glenn Grothman going to make great copy, David?
Well, I hope so. I mean, he's talking about things that need to be talked about. And in reality, he's talking about the same things Scott Walker is talking about. If you heard his acceptance speech in West Dallas Tuesday night, he said Americans don't celebrate April 15th Tax Day. They celebrate July 4th Independence Day. We should measure our success by how many people we take off of food stamps. We've got a president right now who's boasting about, I think he's tripled the number of food stamp recipients. That's not a healthy sign, and it's a sign that the economy is not performing. The caller said, well, what are the wages of the jobs in Wisconsin? You know, even if they're low-wage jobs, more jobs mean more competition for workers. That's what raises wages, you can't say, I'm going to wait for the right job. You have to start with somewhere. I think, though, that the jobs we've been adding have been good-wage jobs. So that's my answer.
All right.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes.
One thing that's been bantered around during the whole election season and everything is the U.S. economy is in such terrible shape and Obama ruined. We're the motor force right now in growth in the world economy. China's growth is going down. Europe is on the verge of going back into recession. Countries like Brazil are slipping. U.S. is growing at, 3.5%. We are the force that's moving the world economy forward. We're not doing badly. The problem is not, we're not feeling it at the local level. But on the bigger number, looking at the numbers, the macro numbers, we're doing a good job. In the United States, we shouldn't be bad mouthing our economy. We're the thing keeping the world economy moving.
You're right, Lou. And again, timing.
Well, let's. Is it time that Democrats get a new game plan? Kathleen Vinehout, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, made that comment after the election and the big GOP win. Some people are saying, "Hey, maybe the." Chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Mike Tate, isn't doing such a good job. Let me ask the Democrat first, or former Democratic state lawmaker, Louis Fortas. Democrats need a new game plan and maybe a new chair?
Well, I think they definitely need to not run away from their message. I think that what happens when you get in some of these races, and especially if you feel you have a decent chance of winning, and you bring in these outside consultants, and they say, you know, get on the phone, raise money so we can put all these ads on TV for you, and duck the issues as much as you can, dance around them. And I don't think, I didn't do that when I was running for office. I was pretty straightforward. And I won in a district that was a swing district. I had two, suburbs and, you know, and which were the larger part of my district. And I think the Democrats have a decent message. I think the majority of Wisconsin votes Democratic in the big turnout election. So I think the message resonates, and I think they should just, you know, push their message a lot more and not run away from it and not duck it. In terms of some of the personnel and some of the people outside of the candidates who are involved in the elections, yeah, I think that people need to look at, you know, some of these outside groups and some of the, you know, people that are you know, kind of running the operation who aren't the elected.
Well, first of all, I think that absolutely Senator Vinehout is correct, although I think she'd push it more toward the to the left, which, look, what did not work? Class warfare did not work. And you nominated a woman, Mary Burke, who definitely is a member of the 1% and an outsourcer of jobs. But that didn't work. The war on women thing didn't work. I guess it's a little tiresome. Senator Udall in Colorado was defeated, and he was waging this war on women kind of theme, this meme, and the Denver newspaper called him Mark Uterus because he was so, and this war on women thing did not work. And, you know, look, we've got Joni Ernst in Iowa here who beat back Mary Lasich is the new Senate president in Wisconsin. And you got to get off this minimum wage thing. It's just not resonating with the average voter, the average working person. The Democratic Party's gone so far away from the middle class concerns and whatnot. And they have all these little special groups. I mean, Sandra Fluke in California, Wendy Davis filibustering for abortion in Texas, and somehow the Nation and MSNBC thought that was the road to success to become governor of Texas.
Yeah, so do you think Mike Tate is going to lose his job over this, David?
Ron Reneke didn't. I know. Actually, I like Ron Reneke. I think I'm glad the Brewers brought him back. But yeah, Mike Tate should lose because normally when you have this. But in Mike Tate's defense, it wasn't just Wisconsin. I mean, it was all over the nation. I think that they picked up something like, I got to look here, 9 governors, I think. The GOP now holds, they went from, well, the GOP now holds 33 of 50 governors. You had, I think, a pickup when all is said and done of 9 U.S. senators, Republicans, you know, when Alaska comes through, and I think they have to have a runoff in Louisiana. So this was a nationwide phenomenon. But I think this top-down idea, and again, I think this violates the Democratic Party. This top-down, I mean, you used to have this smoke-filled room. Well, they still have the room, but not the smoke. You've got Mike Tate and Chris Larson dictating in the 17th Senate District that we're the homegrown guy, Ernie Whitwer. He's not. His name shall not be spoken in the convention. He will receive nothing from the party. My man is Pat Bomhack, who I have said, who was airdropped into Southwest Wisconsin. He's all farm cap and no dairy barn, and so they've elected now Howard Markline there. Thank you.
All right, Mike Tate's future job prospects, Lewis.
I got to go back to one thing. I mean, yeah, listening to David, you know, he's talking to too many of his Republican friends. You know, this Democratic message, it does resonate. When you do have, you know, a larger voter turnout, I mean, that Democratic message wins. I mean, the Elizabeth Warrens of the world are very, very popular, and they do, represent a large percentage. You have these, you know, bright red states that voted, for minimum wage increases. David, you're talking to your group of Republican operatives.
Not so little, Lou. Actually, quite a few of us. And if you look at the election results, quite a few of us.
Yeah, very. And let you sum up, Lewis, because we have to move on to another issue.
Okay. What's the question?
Well, you were finishing up a statement.
Oh, I was just saying that David's attacking the Democratic message and the anti-women. All of that, I would stand behind. I think it is true. And I think it could be packaged a little bit better. But that's a winning message if it was packaged right and if it was aggressively pushed.
As we mentioned earlier, Waukesha County District Attorney Brad Schimmel will be Wisconsin's next Attorney General. He also happens to play the bass guitar in a band that he has jammed with for two decades. And our Week in Review question is, what is the name of Schimmel's band? What is the name of Schimmel's band? 1-800-642-1234. We are going to put you on the air to guess, and the first one who gets a right answer is the winner. And we will give you a prize of some sort. So what is the name of Attorney General-elect Brad Schimmel's band? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And once we get a caller with a guess or two, we will we'll play you a little bit from the band. And we'll hear from Attorney General Schimmel what he had to say at his victory speech. So let's, I think we have a guess. All right, Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom. What is the name of Attorney General-elect Brad Schimmel's band?
It is called Four on the Floor. Never heard them myself, but familiar with the concept.
You are correct. So here's, in fact, a little taste of Four on the Floor, a rock, rhythm, and blues group, and it played in front of Schimmel's supporters at his victory party on Tuesday night. Here's a taste of what they sound like. I don't know if that's Brad Schimmel singing there.
Sounds like Elvis.
Anyway, you know what, Tom? You are a winner. Thank you for guessing. We'll get your contact information and send you a prize. And you know, Schimmel closed his victory speech with these three words before taking to the stage one more time to wow the crowd. Let's take a listen.
We have our work cut out for us. A lot of challenges are ahead. But tonight is not about that. Tonight, it's all about the bass.
Well, you know, we only have less than a minute to go. Politically, Lewis, it's all about the base?
I guess so.
Yeah, and...
Well, it's you know, in this election, you had that 45%. In the 19th century, you used to talk about yellow dog Democrats, and it was a person who... They'd vote for a yellow dog if it was Democrat. We had that, the anti-Walker vote. There are still people in the middle. Scott Walker got those, but he got the independent voters.
Yeah, I think the it'll be interesting in you know, going forward, because this was a good Republican year, as David has pointed out. The next year, the people up for like the senators and that, these are the people that were elected in that Tea Party 2010. And some of them are in pretty blue states, so it's going to be a very interesting. It's going to be a much larger turnout. So it'll be interesting to have this conversation 2 years from now.
Yeah.
And see what's going on.
And I wish we had more time. Very briefly, David Blaska, is Governor Walker going to run for president?
I hope so. He's got all the tools, Joy.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, and this is all about the base that we'll finish off on here. Thanks very much, Lewis Fortas and David Blaska, for being with us.
Thank you, Joy, and thank you, David.
Lewis Fortas is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. David Blaska, former Dane County supervisor. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Brianne Shasso, and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. This is the Ideas Network.